My name is Amber Reynolds. There are three things you should know about me. I'm in a coma. My husband doesn't love me anymore. Sometimes I lie. With these chilling words, we're thrust into a nightmare scenario, being fully conscious yet unable to move or communicate. Amber lies in a hospital bed, trapped in her own body, experiencing what medicine calls locked-in syndrome. She can hear everything, the steady beep of machines, nurses discussing her condition as if she weren't there, and most disturbingly, her husband Paul's visits. Through Amber's internal monologue, we experience her mounting terror. When nurses call her poor love and what a mess, her silent scream, "My name is Amber Reynolds," highlights her desperate need to assert her identity while being treated as an object. But it's Paul's visits that truly disturb her. Something about his cologne seems stronger than usual. His voice carries an unfamiliar edge, and there's a slight tremor in his hand when he touches her face. "I can't remember what happened," she thinks, "but I know with unwavering certainty that this man, my husband, had something to do with it." Before her accident, Amber co-hosted the popular Coffee Morning radio show, but felt threatened by colleague Madeline Frost. Rather than improving her performance, Amber plotted revenge with her friend Joe through Project Madeline. Her sabotage was calculated and severe, creating a fake Twitter account spreading rumors with hashtag FrostBitesTheDust, planting threatening letters among Madeline's belongings, and ultimately engineering Madeline's downfall by deliberately leaving her microphone on during offensive comments about vulnerable children and pregnant women. What's disturbing is Amber's elaborate self-deception. She fixated on Madeline's minor flaws, occasional tardiness, and a supposedly fake laugh to justify her actions. When Madeline's career collapsed, Amber feigned surprise while secretly delighting in her downfall, even offering false sympathy. This capacity for deception and lack of remorse provides early clues that Amber may not be the reliable narrator she presents herself to be. Amber's marriage to Paul, a writer she met as a TV reporter, is deteriorating silently. Her discovery of small black lingerie in Paul's wardrobe fuels suspicions of infidelity, particularly with her sister Claire. Their inability to conceive has pushed Paul toward alcoholism. Amber recalls him staying up all night in the shed with his laptop and a bottle, writing words that didn't belong together. Their communication breakdown widens their divide, with Paul retreating to his writing shed while Amber obsessively controls their home. Claire, Amber's younger sister, creates immediate tension. Blonde and beautiful, where Amber is dark-haired, Claire is positioned as the new and improved daughter their parents wanted. When she visits uninvited, entering without waiting, Amber pointedly mentions Claire spending more time with Paul lately. Claire's reminder that she's only around the corner feels more threatening than comforting. The narrative reveals Claire isn't actually Amber's biological sister, but childhood friend Taylor, whose identity Amber stole after trauma. This explains their hostility, especially when we learn Claire deliberately caused the gas explosion killing her parents, claiming she did it so they could stay together. The novel's before diary entries, 1991 to 1993, illuminate Amber's disturbed psychology. They portray a troubled girl amid family dysfunction and social isolation. The writer sleeps in her deceased grandmother's bed, despite her mother's redecorating offers. Her home life features alcoholic parents and emotional neglect. "After dinner, I watch TV alone until my mother's alarm signals bedtime at 9. Once I'm in bed, my parents resume arguing. To drown out their fighting, I hum The Wheels on the Bus, a song Nana used to sing." The entries chronicle the writer's intensifying friendship with Taylor, fixating on their shared birthday and birthplace. This connection grows obsessive as she envies Taylor's seemingly perfect family. The shocking twist reveals these diaries actually belong to Claire/Taylor, not Amber. Claire completely assumed Taylor's identity after the tragic fire. Edward, Amber's university ex-boyfriend, introduces another threat. Their seemingly casual Oxford Street reunion after a decade apart is undermined by his unnaturally preserved appearance. The true horror emerges when Amber discovers Edward has been stalking her for years, his apartment filled with corkboards displaying a disturbing timeline of surveillance photos meticulously dated and annotated. As the novel reaches its climax, layers of deception unravel, revealing shocking truths about Amber's identity. We learn she has been living a life built on lies. Her identity, her relationship with Claire, and her victimhood are all more complex than initially presented. The most stunning revelation, Amber was originally named Claire, while her sister Claire was actually Taylor. After the childhood fire that killed Taylor's parents, Amber assumed Taylor's identity and was adopted by Taylor's relatives. The gold bracelet with their shared birthdate that appears throughout the narrative symbolizes this twisted connection. Amber's unreliability as a narrator becomes clear as we discover fabricated relationships and events. Her supposed friendship with Joe, who allegedly helped plan Madeline's downfall, is entirely imaginary. Joe was Taylor's childhood imaginary friend that Amber borrowed for her adult life. The hospital setting transforms into a theater of terror when Edward's role as a night porter is revealed. During quiet hour visits to Amber's room, while she lies helpless but conscious, Edward reveals his obsession and systematically tampers with her IV drip to prolong her helpless state. 6 weeks after hospital discharge, Amber executes her most calculated act, methodically poisoning Claire, Taylor, and David, then framing Madeline for their murders. She adopts their twin children, giving Paul the children he always wanted while eliminating the last witnesses to her true identity. The novel's final twist arrives when Amber discovers her childhood bracelet with her birthdate on a tray, evidence someone knows her real identity. This unsettling conclusion leaves readers questioning whether anyone can truly know themselves or others completely. Sometimes I Lie explores profound questions about identity and self-knowledge. Amber's opening statement serves as both warning and confession about her fractured relationship with truth. Throughout the novel, lies become so ingrained they transform into personal reality for the liar. Amber's identity theft functions as a metaphor for human reinvention at terrible cost. Her childhood diary entries reveal her profound envy of Taylor's life, eventually leading her to literally steal Taylor's identity. Most disturbing is the novel's suggestion that we can lie to ourselves so effectively we lose sight of our true nature. Amber portrays herself as a victim while concealing her capacity for manipulation and violence. This self-deception justifies increasingly disturbing actions, including murders she frames as necessary for survival. By the novel's end, we question whether anyone can truly know themselves or others. As Amber observes, we are all children disguised as adults, hiding behind carefully constructed personas, suggesting identity itself may be fiction, bearing little resemblance to truth.